Alaska's age demographics are changing. Once a state with a high percentage of young people, the state population is aging quickly. The 2010 census revealed that we are now number one in the nation for the growth rate of our aging population. This graying demographic, coupled with a shortage of doctors, has meant a crisis for elders seeking physicians who will take Medicare recipients. How is this being addressed in Alaska? What changes are taking place with Medicare that Alaskan seniors need to be aware of? Medicare, we're talking about it today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Alaska businesses and nonprofits. From research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production, Solstice Advertising, an agency for brands that want to shine.
The 8th Annual Bioneers in Alaska Conference, Adapting to a Changing Planet, is October 14th through the 16th at UAA. Presentations include renewable energy, urban homesteading, sustainability workshops, and keynote speaker Thomas Elpel. Storyteller Tamarack Song will speak at the Wendy Williamson Auditorium on October 15th as part of the conference, but tickets are available to the public at the door. Details at bioneersinak.org. This message sponsored by Green Star.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Good morning. I'm Lori Townsend, sitting in for a vacationing Steve Heimel. Thanks for joining us today for a discussion on Medicare. My guests are Judith Bendersky, State Medicare Information Office. Are you the director of the office, Judith?
Program manager.
Program manager. And Dr. Kathy Schumacher, who is the medical director for Providence Senior Care Center. And also Dr. George Rainier. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
That's right.
Rainier. And Dr. Rainier is with the Alaska Medicare Clinic Incorporated. So we have some numbers in the state about aging. And we were discussing this a bit before we went on air about how the state still does have a high percentage of young people, but we also have a percentage of folks who, some of them came here in the 70s to work on the pipeline and decided to stay instead of leaving the state when they got older. So we do have an aging demographic in Alaska. We're starting to catch up with the rest of the nation in that regard. We would love to have you join our conversation if you have questions. There's been changes under the Affordable Care Act, the federal overhaul of health care, and that has impacted some Medicare tenants of Medicare. If you'd like to call in, the number here toll-free is 1-800-478-8255. That's 1-800-478-TALK. And if you're in the Anchorage area, the local number is 550-8422. So before we start describing the new Medicare facilities that are here in Anchorage, let's talk a little bit about the changes taking place in Medicare under the Affordable Care Act. Judith, the dates have changed for signing up for prescription drug coverage. Tell us what's new.
Okay. Well, in the past, people had only a six-week window of opportunity in which to switch or join or drop a Medicare Part D prescription drug plan. That period of time has moved. It's earlier now. It's going to start October 15th, and it will end December 7th, enabling people to focus maybe more on Thanksgiving and Christmas and be in less of a mad dash to do their shopping and their comparing. So it's October 15th to December 7th. That's the annual enrollment period for changing the prescription drug plan. That's Part D as in drugs.
So it seems as if there was another date that moved up also. Besides the drug coverage, what other dates have changed?
I'm not aware of any other dates that have changed. There are various enrollment periods, and people turning 65 who are interested in joining Medicare or don't have any other coverage still have a seven-month window of time, 3 months preceding their birthday month, the month of their birthday, and 3 months after. That's the time to enroll in Medicare initially. Some people are still working or they have a spouse that's working. They can delay signing up in Medicare for Medicare. That's a special enrollment period which starts after the termination of their other coverage. And then there's another period of time for people who just never signed up for Medicare, and that's January 1st to March 31st every year. That's called the general enrollment period.
So until you sign up for Medicare, if you have other insurance, that's your primary insurance. It doesn't change just automatically when you turn 65, correct?
That's correct. But there are many people with unique situations, and some people work for large group employers with more than 100 people, and the rules for who pays first is that the employee health coverage pays first. But for people who work for small group employers with less than 20 people, the rules are a little different. So people need to check on the facts that are pertinent to their specific situation. And that's what we're experts in at the office.
So there's something called the a so-called donut hole in prescription drug coverage. What is that? And did the Affordable Care Act address it?
The donut hole is the popular term for what is otherwise known in the insurance industry as a coverage gap. And when Part D, as in drugs, was initiated in 2006, the way the program was designed was that the Medicare Part D coverage would help people with about 75% of the cost of their medications. But then when they reach a certain threshold, when the full cost of the drugs reaches about $2,800, the individual is in a coverage gap until they've spent several thousand dollars out of pocket. At that point, they come out of that coverage gap or that donut hole, and they have catastrophic coverage at 95%. The donut hole is closing. That coverage gap is closing over the next number of years until there will be no coverage gap in 2020.
Did you say several thousand dollars?
Yes.
So, in other words, seniors get to a certain point and then it's completely out of pocket, 100% out of pocket at this point.
That's correct. Now, some seniors qualify for what's known as extra help, which is a really great program that many, many people are eligible for. And if people qualify for that extra help subsidy, then they avoid paying premiums, deductibles, and they avoid getting stuck in the donut hole. So anybody that has any concern about being able to pay for their medications really ought to contact us, and we'll screen them with very specific numbers as to their income and their assets, and we'll help them apply for extra help.
And I want to let our listeners know that we'll have some of those contact numbers on our website, too, when we wrap up the show today, so that if you don't have a pen and you're driving, please don't try to write while you're driving. Just wait. When you get home, you can go online and check those numbers and contact folks. And Judith, you have outreach centers across the state, not just in Anchorage. So tell us about some of these other places in rural Alaska where folks can get help.
Okay. Well, the funds that that I apply for from the federal government come into the state health department, and we use some of those funds to grant money out to Access Alaska in Fairbanks, which has a significant outreach into the Fairbanks North Star Borough, including Nenana, Esther, Fox, North Pole. We have a grantee in Anchorage at the Anchorage Senior Center. And then there are about 45 certified counselors in the network statewide that work for agencies such as Manilok Health Center, the Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, Southeast Senior Services, Access Alaska. Many, many agencies that serve seniors and people with disabilities have counselors embedded in their staff that are very well trained to handle calls and do enrollment clinics and otherwise help their neighbors.
1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, or locally 550-8422. You can also email questions if you have them to talk@alaskapublic.org. We're talking about Medicare today, and we have two physicians with us who are with new Medicare facilities here in Anchorage. Dr. Kathy Schumacher is with the Providence Senior Care Center. Tell us about the Providence Center, when it opened, and what you're doing.
Well, thank you. The Providence Senior Care Center opened in January of 2011. It's located in Tower B of the Providence facility, Suite 314. Phone number is 212-3420. We provide primary care to people age 55 and older, irrespective of their type of insurance or lack of insurance, although the majority of our patients are on Medicare. And we provide primary care. Our goal is to become a medical home where people will be known, will know their medications, will know their problems, will know who they're seeing, their specialists, and coordinate their care. We focus on the whole person, on preventive care as well. One of the good things about it is we use the electronic medical record that is also used by the hospital, and it facilitates communication about the patients when they're in the hospital. And if they come into the ER, their outpatient record's easily available. So that helps with care and coordination of care.
I want to talk a little bit about the concept of a medical home in a moment, but I first want to turn to Dr. Rainier with the Alaska Medicare Clinic. That's the other new facility here in town. When did your facility open, and where are you located?
Well, the Alaska Medicare Clinic opened in June, and it's located on the Old Seward Highway just south of O'Malley. There's a Lowe's on that corner and a Pancake House next to that, and then the next building south on the Old Seward Highway is a building called O'Malley Square, and the Medicare Clinic is located on the main floor in O'Malley Square. There's plenty of parking. It's easy access on the bus line and open during usual business hours. And it's open for people who have Medicare or who are just about getting Medicare. So it's not open to folks who do not have Medicare unless they have Medicare and Medicaid as well.
Now, Dr. Schumacher, you said that you take patients beginning at age 55, is that correct?
Yes.
Do you also take patients at 55?
No, we do not. This clinic relies entirely upon Medicare payments. So if you are 64 and a half or 64 and three quarters or just about ready to get Medicare, then you can get into the clinic. But basically, you have to be covered or Medicare beneficiary.
Okay. Why does the Providence Center take folks at 55? They're not on Medicare, are they?
Well, it's not specifically a Medicare clinic. It's a senior care center. And we had to set the age at something. So that's why it was decided at 55.
So what are the, I'm not wishing to have the two of you compete with each other,
right,
but what are the main differences? Now, this is one of them that you've identified, Dr. Schumacher, that you are a senior care facility, not just a Medicare facility.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some of the main differences between how the two clinics operate?
Well, I like to think that we complement each other, and so rather than focus on the differences, focus on, you know, what we both do well.
Mm-hmm. But you are taking different patients in. You're taking people that aren't on Medicare.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that? Why are you taking folks that aren't currently on Medicare?
I'm not sure why we wouldn't. I guess we're a senior care center, and we're trying to provide services to seniors, whether they have no matter what kind of insurance they have.
Okay. 1-800-478-8255 is the number to call if you're anywhere but the Anchorage area. In the local area, 550-8422 is the number to call. Let's, Judy, yeah.
Yeah, I just had a comment. In Alaska, we have about 66 or probably by now 67,000 people on Medicare, but 20% of them are younger than 65. And they've come into Medicare through a determination by Social Security that they qualified for Social Security disability. So many people are on disability getting a Social Security benefit, and after 24 months of getting that cash benefit, they get a red, white, and blue card in the mail, and they are on Medicare.
Okay.
Thank you for that.
So How many people in Alaska are on Medicare? What's known about the numbers that we have here in the state?
Well, I get a lot of spreadsheets, and I can find lots of numbers by borough and by racial group. And generally speaking, I've been watching the Medicare population increase sharply over the last 4 years, which is as long as I've been involved. So there's about 66,500 right now. Nationwide, there's about 10,000 people every day becoming 65. And if you extrapolate that to Alaska, it is probably means about 25 to 75 people every day in Alaska turning 65.
Wow. We're going to take a caller now, and then when we come back from the call, I'd like to talk about the concept of a medical home and kind of flesh that idea about what that means. But first, we're going to hear from Gina, who's in Anchorage and has a question or a comment about accountability and affordability. Hi, Gina.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment about some changes that were made in the donut hole this year based on the Healthcare Affordability Act. Judith stated that 100% of the costs when the patient's in a donut hole has to be picked up by the patient. But part of the act changed that this year so that the branded products are discounted by 50%. The pharmaceutical companies pick up half of that cost when patients go to the pharmacy, so they no longer have to pay that 100%, although the 100% does go toward the total cost of getting them out of the donut hole to catastrophic coverage. So that's changing. It's not quite as bad as it used to be. So I just thought I'd make that comment.
That's correct.
Well, thank you for the call. Thanks for that clarification.
Okay. Thank you.
So, Judith, can you talk a little bit about that, what that means? It always seems to me that it's difficult to understand all of the rules that are in place for people to know how to go about signing up and why is it so complicated?
Well, Medicare is health insurance, and health insurance in general is complicated. When you get a group of actuaries, accountants, and attorneys developing law, it gets complicated. And the other thing is Medicare is trying to be one-stop shopping health insurance for everybody. And there's many people that come into their 60s or their 70s still working or having a spouse that's still working or having had Veterans Administration health care services or having served our country and having TRICARE. There's many people that have Indian Health Service, tribal benefits. So, yeah, it can be complicated. And prescriptions in particular are very complicated. But just to go back to the 50% that Gina mentioned, that is true that people who are taking a brand name drug who get stuck in the donut hole because of the high cost of brand name drugs will only pay 50%. And over the next number of years, that percentage will decrease until it's zero. But that brings up the point that if possible, people should consider or have their physicians consider a generic if that's possible and that would work for them.
I wanted to talk a little bit about this concept of a medical home. And you had mentioned it, Dr. Schumacher. But Dr. Reinier, is that something that your facility is also engaging in, the concept of medical home?
Yes, indeed. In fact, the idea of a medical home has been around for centuries, and it has newly acquired this term. When I came to practice in Anchorage, my office was actually located where the present elder care office is located at Providence Hospital, and I was there with Dr. Blankenship. We shared the office together. And he was an internist and had been an internist in town for a long time. And his practice was a medical home. And the people down the hall, Dr. Fish, his practice as an internist was a medical home. And Dr. Brownsberger, in with his associates, had a medical home. And my interpretation of what a medical home is a place where, first of all, you can contact when you're ill for advice. You can visit the Office for Diagnosis and Treatment and Evaluation. You can rely upon that office to send you or ask you to go to places which they think may augment the treatment, such as other specialists, rehabilitation centers, counseling, social services, all those kinds of things. And that indeed was the way that those gentlemen practiced medicine. And but the idea of a medical home actually became popular in the lower 48 after managed care started. In managed care, most patients were not taken care of in the manner of the old-fashioned medical home. They frequently were shunted from one managed care plan, one set of doctors or clinics, to another as their employers changed contracts with managed care plans, so that you couldn't really count on having an office where people knew you, where people felt responsible for you, but rather were just taking care of you as another client rather than a patient. So when that fell upon hard times and people became unhappy with that, which they still are in that kind of a situation, the idea of a medical home sort of burst forth. But really, it is a retrogression to the way medicine was practiced for a long time in this country and in this town.
Now, when we're talking about managed care, are you talking about HMO programs or?
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
So is that changing in a large degree as far as how people are approaching total care?
I can't really speak from experience on how things are in the lower 48, other than what you read in the medical literature about the disappointment that patients have and the physicians have in dealing with patients in a large managed care type organization or an HMO organization. There has been a lot of backlash. Everyone knows about that. Fortunately, in Alaska, we avoided HMOs and managed care, so that the patients here in town have always enjoyed having a medical home, so that the concept is not new, the name is new.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Schumacher, are there things that you'd like to add to this idea of a medical home from the Providence Clinic's perspective?
Well, I like the way Dr. Reinier described it as the way the old internists practice, and I like to think I practice that way and try to give my patients a medical home. He's right. It's kind of got this new political aspect to it, but I just kind of look at it as this is the way I would like to be taken care of, and this is the way I like to take care of my patients.
1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK is the number to call to join our conversation today about Medicare and medical homes or prescription drug coverage. If you have questions locally in the Anchorage area, the number is 550-8422. And we're going to hear now from Edward, who's in Anchorage, and he has a question about the Alaska Medicare Clinic. Hi, Edward.
Hello. My wife and I moved here from Chicago about 2 years ago. We're in our mid-70s, and we had terrific coverage from a large teaching hospital around Chicago, very good Medicare coverage. That was the biggest disappointment we had when we moved here, was the lack of doctors who would take Medicare patients. And it took us quite a bit of effort to find one who would even accept us. So I'm very glad to hear that Dr. Reinier and the Alaska Medicare Clinic have opened up. Now, I understand that that was started with a million-dollar grant from either the federal government or from Providence Hospital to get it funded. And before we sign up for that, though, my main concern is what would happen if they don't make a go of it after that funding runs out? Are we going to be back out in the cold again without having a primary care physician to look after us?
Thanks for that question, Edward. And I think that it would be good for both of you to discuss the two clinics, because there are two here in the city now. Dr. Reinier?
Yes, Edward, that is a very good question, and I'm extremely happy that you asked that. The The clinic was conceived as a new way to practice medicine, providing the highest quality of care, but at the minimum expense. And the clinic was designed right from the outset as being self-supporting by patient charges only, that is, Medicare charges only. And the clinic was basically sponsored by a consortium of the Alaska State Medical Association, the State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, Alaska Physicians and Surgeons, and Providence Hospital. These four entities got together, put enough money into the pot to be able to develop a business plan that was done professionally by a company in California after the concept of how to do this was conceived here in town. The organization in California penciled it out, and sure enough, it showed that using the kind of technique in patient care that was anticipated in the Alaska Medicare clinic, that it would be self-supporting if it could develop or obtain startup funds. So in concept, it would not need annual subsidization from any public entity. Now, the startup funds were obtained actually from the Alaska State Legislature in 2009 as a capital grant. And we received $1 million, which was slightly short of the amount that was conceived as necessary to get it going until it could be self-supporting. So at the present time, the clinic is up and running, and it turns out that using the way that the clinic operates, the clinic will be self-supporting as soon as the projected number of patients start walking through the door. So already it seems as though the clinic can be self-supporting, and once we have enough patients walking through the door, the clinic will not require any further funding. So I hope that answers your question, but it was the state, and we had anticipated actually obtaining some money from an earmark, but of course we all know that earmarks went away last year or earlier this year. So we are nearly completely funded, but organizations here in town are making up the difference, and it looks like the clinic works just exactly like anticipated.
Okay. Do you foresee any difficulty in getting obtaining staff on an ongoing basis as your needs dictate?
No. It appears that there are a number of physicians in town who have volunteered to fill in for vacations to work their extra, and so it appears that the way the clinic operates is popular both with nurses and physicians, and there seem to be plenty of people out there who can jump into the slot when the clinic load gets to that point. So the clinic actually is rather infinitely expandable. First expansion would be in expanding hours into the evenings and weekends, of course, with additional nurses and physician help, and then the clinic, of course, can expand its size too. So the clinic is quite expandable, quite flexible, and fortunately is replicatable in other communities if those communities so desire to do so.
Okay, that's good. Is your record keeping computerized?
Our record keeping is computerized, and it's hooked up with Providence Hospital, so we have the same kind of advantage of being able to see what's been going on with patients who have been in the hospital, in the emergency room, who have had laboratory data or x-ray studies at Providence Hospital. So that's turned out to be a very nice arrangement as well, and of course improves record keeping and record transfer, which has always been a problem.
Yes.
Between patients and facilities.
Mm-hmm. That was one of the things I enjoyed most back in Chicago. The hospital was completely computerized, and when we'd have an x-ray or an MRI or anything else, the next specialist we saw immediately had that available to them to review.
Yes, that's very good.
Well, thank you.
What about one more question? What about referrals to specialists when they're needed? Do you have enough specialists in your consortium to accommodate the needs?
Fortunately, the specialists here in town, both medical and surgical specialists, are quite receptive to referrals from the Medicare clinic. So that is not a problem at all.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Edward, for those great questions. And I want to let Dr. Schumacher talk about the sustainability going forward of the Providence Center, but we're going to have to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll be talking with our physicians and also Judith Bendersky about Medicare in Alaska and changes to prescription drug coverage under the Affordable Care Act as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com. If you want to avoid the burden of student loans or the risk of mortgaging your future, an Elks scholarship may just be your ticket to the college of your choice. Each year, the Elks National Foundation and local Elks Lodge provides millions of dollars in college scholarships to high school seniors. Information about the Elks scholarship opportunities is at elks.org. Elks care, Elks share. This message sponsored by the Alaska State Elks Association.
Welcome back. We're talking about Medicare today on Talk of Alaska, and I think we'll take a call now, and then we're going to talk a little bit about Dr. Schumacher's clinic and sustainability in the future. But let's hear from Todd in Anchorage, and apparently Todd has a question about homebound seniors. Hi, Todd.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for picking up the call. I'm just curious about the availability of cares for homebound Medicare seniors who are in a condition where they really can't leave their home easily at all, and I can take my answer off air.
Well, thanks. That's a great question, because I have questions also about the plan for seniors that are in remote areas. We're talking about the urban center, and of course, a lot of the population of the state is in South Central Alaska, but there's a lot of seniors in outlying areas, too. So let's first address Todd's question about homebound seniors. Who wants to take that question?
This is Judith, and I will. I know that I have the name and address at my office of a physician in Anchorage that moved here about a year or two ago from Fairbanks, and that's all he does is make calls to homebound folks, and he does take Medicare. So if you call my office at 269-3680, I will look that name up and give you the phone number.
Okay, fantastic. Now let's back up just a bit to Dr. Schumacher's clinic at Providence. And we're talking about sustainability going into the future, and a caller had good questions about, okay, so if I start coming to your clinic, I suppose people are a little bit concerned because there's been a lot of trouble with finding some place where they can have a physician that they can stay with for long periods of time once they're on Medicare. And the whole idea of a medical home is kind of this all-encompassing healthcare going forward. So it's important to have that continuity. Dr. Schumacher, tell us about the stability of the Providence facility.
Well, the Providence Senior Care Clinic is supported by Providence, and Providence is committed to keeping the facility going. We currently have four physicians who see patients, as well as a nurse practitioner. We have two additional physicians coming on board in the next couple of months. So there's a big commitment on the part of Providence to keep the facility going. And so I suspect there's no problem with sustainability for our program.
What about capacity? How are the clinics? Dr. Reinier, you had said once we get up to full capacity, the clinic will be self-sustaining. The model has shown that it pencils out. But where are both the facilities at currently? How many more patients can both of you see realistically?
the Providence or the Alaska Medicare Clinic, as it presently is configured, and that is with one physician, three nurses, three medical assistants, greeters, billers, supervisors, as it's presently configured, can see between 45 and 50 patients a day. And presently, we are not quite there. We are up to maybe 25 to 30. So we are being half utilized. So we can readily expand up to 45 patients a day. And that means that if you call today, you can obtain an appointment at the Alaska Medicare Clinic tomorrow.
Wow. And Dr. Schumacher, what's capacity like at the Providence facility?
Well, the ultimate capacity is about 5,000 patients total. So far, we've served about 1,300 patients. We've had about 2,000 visits. We currently have about a six-week wait for a new patient. Our existing patients, if they're sick, can call in and be seen sooner, but we are slowly working in on new people. So, again, we have capacity, and people can, you know, still call in and get an appointment. It's not an urgent appointment. It's a new patient appointment within 4 to 6 weeks.
And walk me through an average visit. When folks come in, especially under this medical home concept, how long are you with a doctor, and what's the visit like? Dr. Schumacher.
Well, my first patient visits are an hour, and I generally spend most of that hour with the patient. They spend some of the time with the medical assistant, giving some of their medical history. But we try to go through where they are with their medications, with their medical problems, what their acute issues might be, what their health maintenance issues are, do a physical exam, decide if any lab tests need to be done, decide if any referrals need to be done, and then schedule appropriate follow-up. So it can vary depending if they have acute issues or if they're well, and we're just establishing care, as to how soon we need to see them and what needs to happen after that. And then our follow-up appointments are half an hour.
And Dr. Reinier, tell us about a typical visit to your facility.
Well, let me tell you first why it turns out to be like it is. The amount of reimbursement that Medicare pays for an office visit is low compared with the actual costs, actually. And the number of new doctors being manufactured for primary care and internal medicine is not really increasing. The complexity of medicine is burgeoning, and the number of people who are getting older and sicker is increasing. So we have this huge mismatch between highly trained physicians and the people who need their care. It seems reasonable then to try to design a method for getting the most out of your talent. And that's how the Medicare clinic works. It uses what you might call an academic model. In training, and all of the physicians have this kind of training, when you are visiting patients in an office or in the hospital, the patients initially are seen by, of course, the nurse, and then by a medical student, and then by an intern, and then by a medical resident, and then possibly by a fellow. And all of these are physicians either in training or with increasing knowledge. And finally, they're seen by the professor. Well, this clinic uses that technique to get the most out of everybody in the clinic. We use our physician as the professor. So the professor, our physician, and that's Dr. Bob Thomas, sees the patient when all the information that's necessary to make a diagnosis or to know what to do next or where to refer the patient, when all of that information has been garnered, by people who have not required the kind of training that he has to make the final decision. When that information is garnered, then the patient is presented to the physician, Dr. Thomas, who confirms by talking with the patient the essential elements of the history, the essential elements of the physical examination. He has at his disposal immediately all of the previous information, such as office visits to other doctors, emergency room visits the night before, recent hospitalizations. All of that information has been put together by the medical assistant and the nurse. So the doctor is not stuck with doing things which the doctor doesn't really have to do. The doctor doesn't have to ask you, when was the last time you're in Mexico? I mean, someone else can get that information.
Sure.
And so the doctor in the Medicare clinic is reserved for his highest intellectual capabilities, and that is understanding the situation because he has all of the data, making a decision about what needs to be done next, recommending that, and then moving on to the next patient, leaving the nurse and the medical assistant to take care of actually writing prescriptions, making referrals to other doctors or other clinics, arranging laboratory evaluations at a future date, and making sure the patient understands what it's all about and when to come back next for a reevaluation. So we try to maximize in this clinic the talents of everybody working in the clinic, and with that, we get the most out of the doctor, which is the most rare commodity in this country.
1-800-478-8255 or 550-8422 is the local number to call. If you'd like to join our conversation, we're going to take some calls now. We'll start. I see that all of our callers are in Anchorage, and I'd sure love to hear from some folks in other parts of the state that have questions. But let's hear from Jean right now, who has a question about insurance versus Medicare. Hi, Jean.
Hi, thanks. 58. I'm working right now. I have insurance through my job, and I plan on being here probably retiring late, like 70 or 70 plus. So right now I'm assuming that I'm going to have my work insurance through that period. Now, Medicare starts at 65, correct?
Correct, for most
okay.
people.
So do I stick with my regular my work insurance? Do I switch to Medicare? Do I do both?
Without asking you a lot of nosy questions about some other things, I would assume if you're going to continue to work until you're 70 or 80 or 90, and your employer continues to cover everybody in the group with health insurance, that would remain the same for you. So just turning 65 doesn't necessitate you signing up for Medicare if you have employee group coverage, which sounds like you will. However, you did say the word assume,
and well, you never know.
You always want to check your assumptions with your employer or with mm-hmm. your health insurance company. Assumptions are very dangerous.
Well, I assume is that I'll continue working till 70. You know, as far as so far, I don't see anything in the future where I wouldn't be here another 10 years. So that
yeah.
was the part.
Yeah, your employer should not drop you from health coverage when you turn 65 just because you turn 65. That would be
right.
ageist.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you turn 65 doesn't mean you have to sign up for Medicare. I think
right. The only thing I was concerned about is, and I haven't talked to my doctor about this yet, but I wasn't. It's a conversation we're probably going to have pretty soon about whether they cover Medicare. So.
It sounds like you might not even have to have that conversation. If, as long
right.
as you keep working and you have coverage that's not Medicare, it might not matter.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jean. Thanks for the call. And let's hear from Mary now, who has a question about eligibility. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for furnishing the clinics and getting staff to take care of it, because with our senior group, this has been one of the biggest problems, is finding medical care after 65. My question concerns, if you have private insurance in addition to Medicare, I understood that you had to use a Medicare doctor as your primary, and that you could not use a private doctor that didn't take Medicare because the private insurance would not pay then. And we had this happen to us. My husband went to his regular podiatrist after he became on Medicare, and he was told they could not take care of him, and they gave him a flyer that explained why, that it would be illegal for them to do this. And we said, well, we'll pay out of our own pocket, or we'll use our other insurance. And the doctor explained that he could not do that. It was illegal. Yet when I read explanations of Medicare or in the newspapers, things about it, it seems to indicate that you can go to your own doctor and pay out of your own pocket, and nobody minds. So would you clarify this, please? And again, thank you for providing these services.
Yeah, I'll be glad to clarify that. Almost all retiree health plans are secondary to Medicare. And so so you would want to go to a provider who accepts Medicare assignment. There's actually three categories of providers. There's providers who accept Medicare assignment in full and bill Medicare electronically. There are providers who do not accept Medicare assignment. They can still take Medicare patients, but they can charge an additional 15% over and above the Medicare approved amount. And then there are providers who have opted out of Medicare altogether that will ask you to sign an affidavit saying that neither they nor you will seek Medicare reimbursement. So since Medicare is primary for you and your private, so-called private, or your retiree health insurance is secondary, you should seek medical care from a provider who accepts Medicare. Because indeed, if the claim goes to your secondary or your retiree health plan, such as Alaska Care or Teamsters or TRICARE, and Medicare has not handled that claim and paid on it, your secondary will deny it.
Thank you so much for making that clear, because I've wondered about it for years and tried to understand it. And thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call, Mary. We're going to go to Robert now, who has a question about hospice care. Hi, Robert.
Hello. How are you?
Good. What's your question today?
Well, as you mentioned, my question is about hospice care, and I have two comparative situations that I'm trying to understand. My father, when he was at the time of his life when he needed hospice care, was in a nursing home, and he basically received 24-hour-a-day service from hospice. Excellent. We have a family member who was in a clinic, and the clinic did not have any kind of hospice care, and so he was discharged at the point where they could no longer provide him with any services. And so he opted to go to his daughter's home, and so he was in the home when he passed away. But his hospice care was just a few hours a week. And I wondered, under Medicare, what's the difference between where you're located, whether you're in a nursing home or whether you're in a private residence?
Okay, this is Judith. The hospice care under Medicare is quite robust and quite comprehensive, and that's because the federal government recognizes that it costs a whole lot less money to take care of an individual who's in a terminal illness at home versus in a expensive institutionalized setting. So under Medicare Part A, hospice is covered. Typically that coverage is for care by nurses, by assistants, LPNs, CNAs, in the person's home. There are some places in the states that have hospice facilities. So Medicare covers under that Part A skilled nursing facility care, hospice care, home health care, and hospital care. The hospice arrangement has to be certified by a physician and the types of services that the individual needs to remain comfortable are laid out in a plan of care. And typically that the physician certifies that, to the best of his or her knowledge, the individual's terminal illness will end in about 6 months. But some people taken care of under hospice care rally. Family members come around and they are resting and they're at home and they're comfortable and they may live for another 90 days or another 6 months. So it really is very specific to the patient. I don't know if I didn't answer your question specifically, be sure to call me later. I'll be at my desk at 269-3680 in Anchorage or 1-800-478-6065.
Thanks for the call, Robert. We're going to take another short break, and when we come back, we'll learn a little bit about the ABCs of Medicare when Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Alaska Business Monthly Magazine, providing insight on statewide business and government issues. There's more information online at akbizmag.com. And by Condor Airlines, with connecting flights from Barrow, Bethel, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, and Prudhoe Bay to Anchorage on Alaska Airlines, and continuing nonstop service to Frankfurt. Details at condor.com.
Thanks for joining us today on Talk of Alaska. We're talking about Medicare and medical homes, Medicare facilities that are here in Anchorage. We're getting older, Alaskans, and that's okay. It's got to be okay. We're going to hear now from Richard, who is calling from Anchorage. And Richard, you have a question about availability?
It was just really a comment. I wanted to say that for a population of Alaska Natives, which is about a fifth of the state's population, there are Medicare services available through the Alaska Native Medical Center and other tribal facilities throughout the state. And we offer comprehensive care, medical home, and now at ANMC, a fully electronic record as well.
I'm glad that you called, because I did want to ask some questions about that for Native elders, what the crossover is and how that works, how IHS works with Medicare, and how easy the system is for people navigating through IHS to get to Medicare-type care and facilities. So are there distinctions that folks should know about? Or tell us, Richard, how that works.
Well, Alaska Natives are eligible for care at the tribal facilities regardless of their insurance status. We do depend on insurance to provide services, expand the services, and meet the need. We don't get enough resources from the federal government to really meet the needs of Alaska Natives. So we encourage people to enroll for insurance, and then we collect the insurance, enabling us to provide more services.
And insurance has become increasingly important to ANMC and other IHS facilities, has it not?
It has. It's approximately 60% of our revenue comes from collecting insurance from either Medicare, Medicaid, or private insurance. And we have an increasing demand for services. There's never enough resources to provide all that's needed. So it's very important for us to collect those insurances to provide the needs of the population.
All right. Well, thank you so much for the call, Richard. I'm glad we got some information in about that. And Judith?
Yeah. There's at every tribal health facility around the state, from Ketchikan to Barrow, there are counselors. They're either called alternate resource specialists or patient benefits counselors or patient financial assistants, who will help all of the folks in their community that have Medicaid that turn 65 and become Medicare eligible to enroll in all the parts of Medicare that they must enroll in if they have Medicaid and Medicare. So that's a real good point, Richard, that there's a lot of services out there through the tribal health facilities.
Well, and speaking of Barrow, we have a call. Thank you, Richard, for your call. And we have Phil in Barrow who has a question or a comment about specialty care. Hi, Phil.
Hello. Yes, my call. I thank you for taking my call. I have a question about specialized care for things such as knee surgeries and knee implants. I've been on the Synvisc regimen here for a while. Don't think that's working out. It looks like they're going to slate me for some kind of surgery or knee replacement. and I don't know what the services are like here. And listening to your program, I wonder what you could provide in places such as Barrow.
So your question is, you're wondering what Medicare provides in Barrow, or I'm not real clear about what your question is.
Yes, that's my question, yes.
Do you have a doctor now that takes your, you're on Medicare now?
Yes, I am.
And you have a doctor in Barrow that you are seeing?
Well, I did, but he left, and we're kind of up in the air now as to what our next move should be.
Yeah, this is Judith. Certainly going to a provider in your community is best, and if necessary, to get a referral. If you want to call my office, we can give you a list of orthopedists, for instance, in Anchorage that take Medicare. And just know that as long as the diagnosis or treatment or procedures are medically necessary, they will likely be covered by Medicare, but your flight and your housing while you're in Anchorage will not.
All right. Thank you for that. And, you know, we're running out of time, but Judith, I wanted to, if you can quickly give us the ABCs of Medicare. I don't know how quickly you can do that, but please do.
Okay. So Medicare has different parts. Part A covers hospital coverage, skilled nursing facility care, hospice, and some home health care under certain circumstances. As you work and pay into Social Security, you prepay for your Medicare Part A. Most people do not pay a premium. Part B, as in boy, is outpatient coverage, and that costs about $115 a month. That monthly premium does go up with the cost of everything else. And Part B covers outpatient visits, diagnostic work, durable medical equipment, and many other things. Part D, as in drugs, covers drugs. Another important piece of Medicare is Medigap, or Medicare supplements. And those are policies that help people pay for the cost of the 20% that they typically accrue after Medicare has paid 80% of the allowable amount.
Well, we are unfortunately running out of time, but again, those numbers will be on our website so that you can get in touch with the clinics, the doctors. Thank you so much to my guests, Judith Benderski with the State Medicare Information Office, Dr. Kathy Schumacher from the Providence Senior Care Center, and Dr. George Reinier with the Alaska Medicare Clinic. Thanks to...
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network by... ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Solstice Advertising, bringing creativity to Alaska businesses and nonprofits. From research and strategy to print, web, and broadcast production. Solstice Advertising, an agency for brands that want to shine. And by First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works. This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.